8:42. A lot of us now are trying to break down the Hanoi summit, the failure to reach a deal between US and North Korea, with the benefit of hindsight. We got a little bit of insight from President Donald Trump with his tweet yesterday. This is how it read. For the Democrats to interview in open hearings a convicted liar and fraudster at the same time as the very important nuclear summit with North Korea is perhaps a new low in American politics and may have contributed to the walk. Never done when a president is overseas. Shame. So he's not only suggesting, of course, that it was an overly politicized move to draw attention to the Michael Cohen hearing in the United States whilst President Trump was trying to deal with North Korea, but also that perhaps was he distracted, or is he suggesting it in some other way negatively affected the way the summit went? Is he shifting the blame to the Democrats in every respect? Perhaps all of the above. On the scene, first time we're doing this segment in our new season, we're going to now catch up with a journalist. I mean, we of course did last week actually go on the scene as well, but that was when the Hanoi summit was in progress, and it was very much in the spirit of the constant coverage we were providing there. But now we're going to go with this moment of reflection to Grace Lee, Reuters reporter covering Asia. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So you covered the summit in Singapore as well, didn't you? What was the major difference looking back between the two of them? There was at least some sort of declaration, of course, in Singapore.
Right. I think the first time there was a lot more excitement because everything was a first. There was that big iconic moment when Trump and Kim first shook hands, and everyone was just trying to get a glimpse of that and, you know, getting the first snapshot out of something that we had never seen before. But the second time around, I think a lot of people were expecting more concrete results, and there was a much higher demand for substance over just kind of these pictures that we could take home. So I think there was a lot more pressure on the two leaders to get something done, and ultimately that didn't really pan out.
What about the two leaders? When we were thinking we might be heading for a declaration, we were looking at their handshakes, their smiles, the comments they were giving, and we were perhaps reading too much in it from afar when we were sort of thinking maybe they are developing something like a special relationship. Was that something that you sensed when you were actually there?
Right. So, you know, I mean, Trump himself even said after his Singapore summit that the two had fallen in love, and you know, a lot of people were looking out for how the two leaders would react to each other. And, you know, here at Reuters, we even had body language experts from different parts of the world trying to read in on what the chemistry was like between the two. And we had some mixed opinions. The analysts say that Kim seemed more confident and comfortable this time around. You know, last time he was a little bit stiff. He had some reservations about Trump, but this time it didn't seem like they were a little bit more familiar with each other. But on the other hand, some experts tell us that they both smiled only when they were expected to. And, you know, all the indications kind of pointed to just how surface level their interactions have been. There were some signs of tension when they sat down as well. And, you know, you have to take it into account that it was the first time they were seen face to face in 8 months, and it was only the second time they've ever met. So,
yeah.
It's hard to say what kind of chemistry they have.
Yeah, I mean, there's naturally going to be a little bit of awkwardness. You're meeting someone,
right,
not for the first time, but in the early stages of a relationship, and you're doing so in front of the world's media. I also thought it was interesting, just as an aside, that Chairman Kim, you know, his default face is a kind of grimace, but when he did smile, it wasn't necessarily in sync with what President Trump was saying. It was more in sync with what the interpreter was saying. And I think any body language analyst has to factor that in, because his responses were coming at unpredictable moments. If you weren't aware, for example, that an interpreter was talking, what was your expectation, though? Were you genuinely optimistic that there'd be a positive outcome?
We all went in kind of with mixed expectations, I guess. A lot of analysts and experts that we had been talking to had expected more solid results from this, because You know, there was that expectation that Trump really needed a win and a distraction away from domestic issues at home. So I thought it could have gone two ways, either some kind of big peace declaration or kind of fall apart in maybe even a bigger way than it actually did, since Trump really didn't have that option of walking away a second time with just kind of pleasantries and smiles and nothing really concrete. So it wasn't totally unexpected, but it does put the two leaders in a weird position now. The fanfare for a third summit really won't be there, and they might actually need to sit down with working level talks before being able to meet face to face for some time, I think.
Right. And White House correspondent David Jackson, just to give us another interpretation of one of the twists and turns, he told us recently that he only found out when it was too late that North Korea was holding a midnight press conference, that he'd not been on the list of journalists that were contacted to attend. What was your version of events there?
Personally, I did not know that the press conference was happening until too late, and that was the case for a lot of journalists, actually, because the North Korean government had reached out to the Vietnamese government and said, hey, could you just contact a couple of foreign media for us? And that included South Korean reporters, American reporters, and local Vietnamese reporters. And since, you know, that was a small pool of people that they just kind of contacted on the fly, we weren't really aware that it was happening, but we were able to kind of just watch the there were a lot of live events happening at the time. We were able to watch from some other press, and we saw that Ri Yong-ho was just kind of reading a prepared statement. He didn't take any questions. He read what he had written down, and that was about it. And it was a very level-headed announcement. You know, he didn't make any big proclamations or anything. It was just a statement saying, you know, kind of contradicting what Donald Trump had said, but giving his own North Korean version of what had happened. And this is coming from a man who in the past has called Donald Trump President Evil during a UN General Assembly. So, but of course, he's known for being diplomatic, so it wasn't completely surprising. And in terms of timing, it was around midnight Hanoi time, and North Koreans have done this before. My colleague who attended the six-party talks in the past told me that they would occasionally hold news conferences really late in the evening because obviously, they're putting a lot of thought into the statements that they're reading out. So it did catch us off guard a little bit. But on the other hand, North Korean state media the next day had a very surprisingly, you know, soft reconciliatory tone, saying that they would work with the U.S. moving forward. So obviously, they're not looking to cut ties with the U.S. altogether or anything. So we'll have to see what kind of message they put out moving forward.
So there may be a gap in interpretation, but all sides are keeping some hope for dialogue continuing, even if it's just at working level for now. But while we were watching very closely for interactions directly involving Chairman Kim Jong-un, and you know, he was talking to the media as well, what about the North Korean reporters who were there? Did you have any interactions with them, or did you witness any interactions? Because I heard they had small chats, for example, with some South Korean reporters.
No, I didn't get to have any chats with them this time around, but I did have some minor interactions with them at the Singapore summit, you know, when I was on the ground trying to take some pictures. You know, one of them even came up to me and said, no, no. Like, that was the only word he ever said to me, was no, because I was trying to take pictures of the scene. But some of our reporters that have been covering the North for a while now and have attended the inter-Korean summit have actually become quite familiar with some of these North Korean reporters. And, you know, they even exchange hellos and, you know, say things like, oh, it's nice weather today. You know, they are people. So they do respond when someone talks to them, but it's always kind of surface level conversations that you just kind of maybe have in the office or something.
Right.
I did see, our reporters did see kind of the North Koreans interacting with a lot of the U.S. you know, lower level officials when they were walking around the hotel where the summit was happening. So, you know, we are seeing more and more snapshots of North Koreans speaking and interacting with the outside world. So that's been really interesting.
So the North Korean reporters, we use the word reporters, but they're not really reporters in the sense that you're a reporter, right? I mean, do they even just come across more as government officials? Like that interaction you described, being told, no, 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 that's not something you would expect a reporter to have the authority to say.
No, no, yeah, they are very authoritative, and they do have some kind of charisma about them. North Korean state media usually gets the best access to these kinds of events. They're set up minutes before Kim Jong-un arrives at a location or even comes down from his hotel. You can kind of even tell when Kim Jong-un is going to be on the move because they set up and they're waiting for him, and they get the first shots of him. And very close-up shots, something that, you know, foreign media will never really be able to do. They're always getting the best angles of their leader. And if you look at their edits, they're always telling some kind of a story. If you watch any kind of KRT or KCNA edit for Singapore, if you watch their one-hour epic movie of Kim Jong-un's trip, it was almost, or I think it was 10 minutes, actually. It was almost like a hero's journey. You know, you watch him come out waving to the people. He goes off to a distant land and, you know, does his work there, and he comes back a hero. And it's interesting to see them kind of post this kind of narrative with the shots that they're getting because, yes, we have, you know, similar job titles, but our work is very different in that sense.
Perhaps Hanoi will be viewed ultimately as a missed opportunity if Singapore was described in hindsight as a disappointing outcome. Neither of right. them have led us any closer to denuclearization. But again, maybe the bigger picture will view that differently. That there was one further missed opportunity, and that was the cancelled working lunch, by the way. And it was so hard.
Right.
Even these details are quite interesting to read from the reporting. Hard to find common ground, even on the like menu items. The first right. night, they were holding back on the menu, I understand, for a long time, and they had to agree on just a simple dinner. What did you learn about that side of things?
Right. We were told that the menu was foie gras, snowfish, and candied ginseng, served by both North Korean and Western chefs. So that's a very glitzy menu. The meal was fully prepared. They were just putting the last finishing touches on it. And, you know, all the chefs were pretty excited to be able to serve the two leaders, and it was called off, and everything had to be put away last minute. And our reporter who was in the hotel at the time was just watching everything being dismantled just hours after they had called it off. And people working to put away the tables and the decorations that they had there for the summit. And it just shows how quickly, how the talks had fallen apart. And, you know, sources who were there told Reuters that, you know, it was a very fantastic dish and that it was a pity that it went to waste.
Well, I hope someone got to eat it, but it sounds like maybe they didn't.
Yeah, it sounds like good food.
Grace Lee, reporter for Reuters, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great to have you with us on the line, on the scene, which is, as I said, a new segment for our new season. But I think with all of the North Korea talk in the last couple of weeks, we're still going to get into the groove with this segment as we use it as an opportunity to travel to different stories, hearing from correspondents and their insights around the world, potentially including here on the Korean Peninsula as well. Can't help thinking about this wasted opportunity, though. Let's hope that, because I think, honestly, it's been a roller coaster in the last few days. I myself have gone from pessimism to optimism and perhaps back again. So let's leave open the opportunity to be optimistic again if you are somewhere like me in that respect. We'll continue tomorrow, 7:05. Stay with us. Thanks to our great production team here at TBS EFM. Got your latest news headlines and Inside Korea next.